Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hey, Julia here. If you'd like to grow your agency with a new free traffic source, we've put together a free resource for you called the Agency Traffic Blueprint, which outlines how you can acquire free organic traffic for your agency's website using Powered by Marketing. You can get that at getrubyrobin.com/blueprint or check the description of this episode for the link.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Agency Toolkit Podcast. I'm your host, Julia McLaughlin. My guest today is Caleb Clark, who founded Hook & Ladder in 2011 with his business partner, who he met while completing their MBAs in Vancouver. Today, Hook & Ladder is a full-service digital marketing agency that works with established brands who are continuing to grow. Today, we're going to be discussing Caleb's journey of building his agency and what he's learned along the way. So thanks so much for joining us today, Caleb.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Julia. Take care. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, definitely. So to get started, let's dive into a couple questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit.
Okay.
So what would you say motivates or inspires you as an entrepreneur or agency owner?
What inspires or motivates me as an entrepreneur, agency owner? I think a few things. Other entrepreneurs is obviously a very obvious one for me. I have a good community and network of people kind of trying to put their vision into reality. And so I watch from afar and sometimes from close up and try to steal little pieces of inspiration to help build what I'm building. And probably the second one as an agency owner is actually my co-founder, Tony Lamb. Just the way he carries himself and the way he goes about his work and goes about, building our team and all of those things. I kind of always find myself in this spot of what would Tony do? And so that is great to have in a partnership, but I definitely draw a lot of motivation from him.
That's awesome. And so I'd love to hear a little bit about your story of, you know, what it was like, you know, what was the, your motivating factor to really, you know, go out on the limb and start Hook & Ladder and what it was like in those early days.
My time at the MBA, right towards the end of it, an organization called Jim Pattison Auto Group, which some people may know of, came into our MBA cohort and basically made a case competition or an internship competition available to those that wanted to participate. So we assembled into groups of four or five people, and there was maybe four or five groups that did that. And the idea is that you had to build a social media marketing program for the launch of their new car and a Scion brand that was coming into Canada. Yeah. And so anyways, fast forward, our group won the competition, and we did a 5 or 6 month internship with that group. And coming out of it, Tony and I both sort of looked at each other and said, "Hey, that was fun. We did a good job. Let's go see if we can get one or two clients and do this outside of the school." Right. So we did that, and that was it. So that was 12 years ago. And that's how it started. And the motivation to grow it was largely tethered to bringing on new clients. So we're people that we felt responsible to do what we promised and then bring on new team members who very quickly our motivation turned to how do we ignite potential for those that are willing and ready to grow, which is our kind of our mission statement of Hook & Ladder.
Okay. That's really interesting. So how did you end up getting those first few clients? Did you win the competition then?
So we won the competition, did the internship, that was our first exposure, honestly, to any form of digital marketing. Like we weren't in digital marketing beforehand. We just kind of almost Googled it and then did it type
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, right, right.
So the first couple of clients were actually partner or sponsor brands as part of that Jim Pattison Auto Group activation. And they just became the natural client coming out of it. But mm-hmm. it was very, you know, very grassroots. We didn't know what we were doing based on a lot of trust. And then, you know, and the tale of how we've grown is basically do great work, leverage that to get new great work. And you know, the word of mouth and the advocacy of our client partners has gone a long way to do that.
That's really cool. So obviously, you know, asking for referrals has been a big part of how you guys have grown. Are there any other ways that you are bringing in leads to your agency as well?
A couple different ways. One of them is, you know, obviously, like you said, advocacy of current clients, but then looking at other agency or company partners that support our target client in different areas of their marketing mix or different areas of their value chain. So we would work with different creative agencies, because we're not a creative production house, you know, PR companies or traditional media companies, and seeing if we can get an introduction that way. Mm-hmm. The second way is just understanding what are the 3 to 5 hot point problems that most, you know, senior level marketing leaders have, and building content around the alleviation of those pain points, almost trying to equip those people with the answers and the toolkits to do it themselves.
Right.
And then being there as a value resource versus we've never really done any systematic sort of outreach sequences, a little bit dabbled here and there, but for the most part, we don't have a big cold outreach component to our business development efforts. Right or wrong, we just haven't. And so
yeah,
it's just about focusing on doing really, really good work for our current clients, and, you know, leveraging their advocacy, working with partners, and then building content around the main problem points that marketing directors have.
Okay. So having those strategic partners and, you know, working with different companies that maybe could use a digital arm, like traditional advertising agencies. It sounds like that's how you guys really got your start. And and then also content marketing, it sounds like, as well. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And trying to, I mean, I guess the big question a lot of times is, should we be focused on an industry vertical so we can make all of those efforts more efficient, like build content for the restaurant hospitality industry or for you know, industry X. And I think we just made the intentional decision a few years ago to be agnostic by design. And we can do that by, you know, our structure and the way we deliver our value is by integrating very tightly with our client's internal marketing team, where they're positioned to be the experts of their industry and we're positioned to be the experts of the function of digital marketing. And so that structure by nature allows us to be a bit agnostic as it relates to that. So how that translates to generating new clients is that we can't necessarily build content on a specific industry vertical, you know, structure or way of organizing our content. So we're looking at the more macro sort of common denominator problems that, regardless of industry that you serve, marketing leaders have these problems, right?
Right.
They're doing a lot of digital marketing, but they don't know if it's having any meaningful translation into business results, either top level or bottom level. They're they're in an industry where they're well behind in terms of digital marketing, their competitors, and they're seeing that result in market share being lost or captured by competitors, and they just don't know what to do. They know they have the need, but they don't know what to do. And then the third main problem is that they're working with a partner that is currently not, you know, meeting or exceeding expectations. They're reactive. They're more of a service vendor as compared to an integrated extension of their marketing team. So those are the three pillars that we sort of, you know, build content on and dive into in terms of providing ideas, support, value add resources for these marketing directors to figure it out on their own or deepen a relationship with us to to support as an extension of their team.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Okay. And then, so when you guys are looking for an ideal client to be working with, is that what you're specifically looking for? Is someone who has an existing marketing team already in place?
Yeah. So our ideal client, I guess, could be best defined as they're an established brand who's growing. So typically not early day startups without much, market validation of their product or service.
Yeah.
They have an internal marketing team of 1 to 3 full-time employees. Mm-hmm. And that's critical because if they don't have that internal team, there's nothing for us to tether to or integrate into, which is our critical component of the value proposition. Mm-hmm. And they're excited about co-creation and experimentation and leveraging data to validate tomorrow's decisions as it relates to budget allocation or tactical execution. And, they want to fulfill a meaningful business case. And so that's the last mm-hmm. component, is that there's a meaningful business problem to be solved, not just, we want to get more awareness or engagement. If it's not a compelling business case, then it's hard to motivate our internal team to sink their teeth into it. Mm-hmm. Because we're going for quality as compared to volume of client partners.
Right. Okay. And, when you're looking for an ideal client, are there any other things that you're really looking for? Like, to be aligned with, having the similar values or anything else that you look for?
I think so, for sure. You kind of nailed it there from a values standpoint. Our team is pretty mission bound and pretty values aligned. So it just makes it a lot more effective if obviously people share the same values as us. The biggest one that comes to mind in terms of the value that we look for, and we can pick this up in our initial sales conversations with them or early days working together, is this idea of evolve or evaporate. So find ways to always be kind of pushing the limits as to maybe preconceived notions or earlier held beliefs that are stagnant and need to be pushed a little bit and imagined outside of the box. And if we have that mentality, then it will really jive well with our team. If we see that mentality from our client partners, it works well with our team.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So you're really looking for growth oriented individuals and who are, like you mentioned, just really excited about the process and to be trying new things and just want to grow their company.
Yeah.
Awesome. Very good. So I know you bring in a ton of your business through referrals. So, what is that sort of secret sauce that you have, uncovered to the best of your knowledge about how to maintain happy clients who are going to bring in those referrals to you at the end of the day?
I think, and I believe that it comes from having a really keen sense of what our clients, and when I say our client, I mean the marketing director, the manager, the coordinator, the team of the marketing team that we work with, mm-hmm. having a really keen sense of what defines a good news story for them, both, organizationally, but also for them as individuals within their organization. I think that every marketing leader and team inside an organization has an ideal depiction of how they want to be represented, viewed, positioned within their organization. And so understanding mm-hmm. the holistic picture of what does a good news story look like for them and being really adamant about figuring that out at the beginning. And then if we can fulfill what their ideal transformation is, both personally and on behalf of the brand, then I think what people, as people, we are by nature drawn to wanting to look like superstars in front of our network by saying, hey, I have a guy, or I have a team, or I have a girl, right? Like we want to basically equip them with the ability to brag on behalf of us and by association them. But it all starts with great work and fulfilling their definition of what a good news story looks like. Because beyond that, then there's, it would be weird to ask for a recommendation or a referral. And a lot of times we're not even asking, they're just, naturally wanting to share with others. So Mm-hmm. I don't know if that answers it well for you, but yeah.
So right at the start, you know, yes. So, you know, right at the start of that working relationship, you're really trying to dig in to find out what their end goal is and then kind of work backwards from there to figure out the ways that you can be best delivering to them to create happy clients at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to put emphasis on the, you know, the co-creation of that story and definition at the very beginning, because, you know, people support what they help or have a hand in creating. And if the relationship is like typical agency, and I don't mean this to any disrespect to great agencies out there, but there's a lot of times where it's very vendor or transactional based in terms of the relationship between the agency and the client. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't create an environment or a platform from which to co-create stuff that
right.
is supported by those that had a hand in building it. And so if our job is to elevate our marketing team of our clients and to help them win, then we have to do that together, and with them having a very meaningful contribution to not only what does the success look like, but, you know, actually getting to the success as an extension of their team. We're not meant to come in and take over and dictate the direction and the story to fulfill. We're meant to facilitate its unearthing.
Yes. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. You guys work very much hand in hand together to create the finished product at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So what would you say has been the biggest overall challenge that you've had to overcome as you've been growing Hook and Ladder?
COVID sucked big time for sure. We lost a lot of clients just because the nature of their business was dependent on, you know, foot traffic, physical foot traffic into stores and such. So that was tough. But ultimately, like, we wouldn't be where we are today without COVID. Just we were forced to learn what resiliency means and really lean on our core values, things that maybe before COVID were just ideas we had written on the wall, so to speak, but they weren't really real because they never needed to be leveraged or utilized. So
yeah, I don't really fully
having the benefit of COVID too. Exactly. So that was a big challenge, but we're much better off now. I think that the other challenge would be always finding the balance between supply and demand, right? Like at the end of the day, we go only as far as the quality of our people. And we are very focused on building great and healthy teams internally full of A players and experts, and our team is our most important thing. It's hard to build that when there is uncertainty with demand, with new business coming in, right? So it's about finding the balance between those two things. Ultimately, mm-hmm. we've always been better off by, despite challenges in predictability around supply or around demand, we've always just doubled down on our supply, on our people, so that because if we're trying to cut corners in that regard, even when the demand comes, we don't have the foundation of culture and team and expertise to service it. So mm-hmm. we've always been a bit aggressive on fulfilling the supply side before demand's there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it can definitely be challenging finding that balance. So hiring alone can be very difficult. So, you know, what do you look for whenever you're, you know, hiring a new team member for someone who's, you know, going to be a good fit? Have you guys sort of, I know it that's a incredibly difficult thing to do, but have you guys, what have you learned in that lesson so far?
I think simply the thing we've done because of what we've learned is just add multiple layers into the process of bringing new people on. So layers of people, so not just talking to one person, because people typically hire people the same as them, right? And that mm-hmm. can be a good thing or in some cases not a good thing. So adding multiple layers from a people perspective, in terms of, call it like people that they interview, and mm-hmm. different things along the way. So we have a case study that's interjected into the process where, let's say we're hiring for an account lead, we would email them a scenario and say, you know, 48 hours later, what would be your response to this scenario? For example, something happened with a client where we need some very immediate and clear action steps for what happens next. And that would be the task. So putting some case study examples together. Mm-hmm. And then a very, very good early days training program that's, you know, well thought out, well organized, and gives us the ability for both sides to make sure it's a good fit. And then finally, we've leveraged Clifton's strengths as a critical component to our team and to the makeup of our team and how new people are hired. So understanding for this role, what would be a good Clifton strengths profile, and then seeing mm-hmm. if that person you know, has those strengths. And if they don't have those strengths, but they're strong in other areas, where else can we slot them into a role?
Okay.
And then ultimately building the position around the person versus the other way around has been critical. And I don't actually know if you can do it differently and have success. So
yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah. That's a very well thought out process that you guys have put in place. So
definitely not my idea.
Yeah, no, I love it. That's awesome. So where do you see Hook and Ladder in 5 years' time?
I think that growth is a big part of our focus right now and will be for the next number of years. And honestly, where I see it is that there's critical members of our team right now that that we're going to call upon to continue to embrace and live out the value of evolve or evaporate. So in the future, you know, the members of our current team will slowly start taking over the agency mm-hmm. is what I see, and growing a team of leaders as compared to, you know, two co-founders in a roster of staff. So I see a little bit of that. So a lot of growth from within, internal team members taking on more ownership roles. Mm-hmm. And you know, over the last year and a half, 2 years, 3 years, really, we've had an opportunity to become very, very crystal focused on our ideal client partner. So I think, you know, over the next couple of years, it's a continuation of saying, hey, this won't be a fit for 8 or 9 out of 10 client you know, leads or potentials, and really focusing on the 1 or 2 that that align across all those different factors.
Okay, so having more quality over quantity when it comes to taking on new jobs.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
And it is funny, like, because I know that a lot of people that listen are agency owners, maybe, or independent freelancers, but as it relates to growth, and it is a cliche statement, I believe, I guess, or a cliche thought, but it's only it won't be until you start focusing on that small percent of the opportunities out there that best align with your team and your ethos and your offering that you will start having exponential growth. So, you know, everyone says like niche down, but again, I don't necessarily agree with niching down on industry standpoint, but find something that defines limiting your scope in terms of who you work with. And that's mm-hmm. when exponential growth takes over.
Like find what really, really makes you unique and totally. And double down on that.
Exactly. And that requires you to transition from this place of like scarcity to abundance mindset. Like when we're, mm-hmm. when we see that, you know, when we're operating out of this lens of scarcity, then we're unable to do those things where it's like, well, we got to take this opportunity and make it work with our team because we don't know when the next opportunity is going to be there, versus we need to bypass this opportunity, even though it checks 4 out of the 6 boxes, because by taking them on, it arrests our team's ability to grow in flow, right? Mm-hmm. And looking at it through abundance mindset, where there's lots of partners out there, client partners out there that are perfect fit, and vice versa. So.
And how did you know when that was, you know, what you guys were really going to focus on and double down on that made you guys unique? How did you know when you had found that one specific thing?
Yeah, it happened right towards the end stages of COVID. If you want to put it, that 2-year timeline on when COVID ended, I'm not sure if it's over or whatever, but towards, you know, towards the later end of it, that's when it started happening. But we knew when we had just found ourselves in that flow state where clients were coming on and they were being serviced appropriately. The team was happy. You know, every week we have celebrations of different releases or deliverables that we give to the client internally. And, you know, the releases were becoming more juicy and people were more passionate. It was just more of a flow state than, oh, well, how are we going to deal with this? And how are we going to deal with that? And then we just knew that, okay, well, let's take a look at, so it ended up being 10 clients. So it was, we called them the model 10 clients and some others that weren't within that model 10. And we just dissected them. We said, what are the common denominator factors that these 10 clients have? Mm-hmm. And we had a checklist of 6 things. They all checked off those 6 things where the other ones didn't. So we said, going forward, right or wrong, let's onboard new clients according to their alignment with these 6 factors. And I highly encourage everyone to do that.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. That's so cool. Like in software, like we talk about like product market fit. So it's like the same thing. It's just really dissecting, you know, what makes your clients happy and then just replicating, putting those processes in place so that you can be achieving that for all of your other clients.
Yeah, exactly. And then further to that, right around that time, we started adopting the flywheel concept from Jim Collins in Good to Great. So that over time we become faster and it becomes harder to slow the flywheel down. And the flywheel always starts for us with deliver great value, like deliver excellent work, and which automatically results in clients being happy and being willing to tell their friends about it to actually mobilizing their advocacy. And then the final part in the flywheel is hire and train A players. So, you know, this flywheel, what we're experiencing now is a little bit more velocity to it and ease of which to push it and have it continue to rotate.
Yeah. Very cool. That's so interesting. Awesome. So we are going to be wrapping up here shortly, but before we move on to the fast 5, are there any, you know, final thoughts or words of wisdom that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I don't know, words of wisdom. I mean, we're still learning, to be honest. I think the word of wisdom is this is an infinite game, right? There's no end state. So just be humble, be on a quest of learning and getting better, and treat everyone that you experience from a client and internal staff member as if, you know, like, I mean, that's it. If you don't have the people, it's not like, there's nothing you can do. You can't go past step one. So, if it means sacrificing growth, you have to do it to double down on your people.
I love it. So be humble, keep learning, and, you know, be a student of, yeah. And then, yeah, people first. Awesome. Yeah. Well, we're going to move on to the fast 5 now. So I have 5 rapid fire questions for you. So first question, what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
A book that I've read that's made an impact on me. Most recently, I read it once a quarter, but The 4 Agreements.
That's a good one.
Yeah. And it's just about whenever you find yourself a little bit, Don Miguel Ruiz, by the way, the author, but whenever you find yourself a little bit floating around and not quite centered, just bring it back to those 4 agreements that you make with yourself and with the world. And that typically gets me back on a solid path forward.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I definitely have to read that one again. It's been a little while, but yeah, it's definitely a good one. And what does your morning routine look like?
My morning routine is up pretty early. I get some movement in. That can be from as simple as, you know, some yoga, a quick yoga stretch, to a little bit more of an aggressive workout. Try to get that in before my three-year-old comes out of her bedroom door at about 7:45, and then do that whole thing. I'm still working on my hair braiding game, which is terrible, but still working on that. Out the door by or get her to daycare by like 8:30, and then get into it. And it's usually my day right now is focused on supporting team members and business development.
Awesome. I love it.
And Athletic Greens, this is not a paid sponsorship, but Athletic Greens, you know, get that in you.
You got to tie that in as well.
Yeah.
Awesome. And is there a CEO that you follow or study?
CEO that I follow or study. There's a couple, agency owners here in Calgary that I follow quite a bit. And just kind of ask them, you know, what would you do in this situation? One of them is named Kevin Wilhelm. He's the founder and president. I'm not sure what his title is now of Pod Marketing in Calgary. And then, another couple guys named Chris Nealand and Ryan Gill, that run Cult and Communo. So, but yeah, I think those are the first that come to mind.
Nice. Very good. And what is your favorite online tool?
My favorite online tool is Loom.
Right. Love now. Loom.
Yeah. So I'm a finger pecking typer, and I like to communicate ideas through talking. And so Loom is just great. And we leverage it across our entire internal team and most of our external client facing communication. So Loom, if you don't have it, it's not free, but it's not expensive either. So.
Yeah. And there's another similar one out there, Vidyard as well, which that one's free for, I think, 25 videos, but They're both very, very similar. Awesome tools.
Yeah.
And last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
One thing I wish I knew began my career. I think that, it's a long, long game. And I think there's a lot of decisions that we made early on based on scarcity mindset, based on, you know, the shot clock is draining down and we gotta make the move now. And I wish that, and, you know, we just were a bit more contemplative with certain things that we did in the early stages, and just acknowledged that 10 years later, where we are today, we're still only in the early stages of the first quarter of the game, you know, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a long game. Be patient, be kind, treat people as the number one most important component. And then, yeah, just take your time.
Yeah. Patience is definitely a great lesson. And it can be tricky to find that balance of, you know, having that hustle and also being patient, because you definitely need both. But there's certain things that you need to play the long game for and just, you know, strategically work towards. So
just be consistent. Like, you look at all the best organizations and teams, it's that they're doing the same thing. They seem slow when you're first looking at them, but they're consistent and they're just pounding the rock over and over. Really what they're doing is focusing on that flywheel, because at some point the velocity of the flywheel will take over and you don't need to hustle or push so hard. Mm-hmm. But the only way to get a flywheel moving is to, like, arduously and very consistently push on the same, you know, foundational pieces of it. So
yeah, absolutely. That's such a great point. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Caleb. It was a pleasure to have you on the show, and I've really enjoyed learning about your journey of starting Hook and Ladder. So thank you so much for joining me for today's episode.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it, Julia.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.